On the Pilot TV podcast this week, we are taking to the skies for Hulu's star-studded adaptation of Catch-22, catching up with Germanic supernatural occurrences in season two of Netflix's Dark, and, speaking purely for myself, failing to have the first clue what in the five families is going on in the latest series of Italian language crime drama, Gomorrah. I'm James Dyer, and welcome to the Pilot TV podcast, where we have once again sifted through almost endless hours of television so that you don't have to. Joining me on this, our 40th instalment, the big 4-0, are my two square-eyed colleagues, the Penfolds to my Danger Mouse, if you will. First up, a man who really needs no introduction. His credentials as a notorious Season 8 Daenerys apologist are matched only by the fact that he can now count all three of the Game of Thrones dragons among his celebrity friends. It's Boyd Hilton. Hello, Boyd.
Hello.
How are Drogon, Rhaegal and Viserion?
They're all getting on very well.
Good, good. I'm pleased.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you. Like the fact you've reduced me to a defender of Game of Thrones.
Yeah, and a dragon handler.
And a dragon,
yeah, that's a promotion.
That's nice.
Yeah. Joining Boyd is a woman who also needs no introduction, though mainly because you can hear her yelling at me several streets away. It's Terry White.
Hello, James.
Hello, Terry. Is this how we're going to do the podcast this week?
I'm trying to be quiet and civilised.
You're going full handmaid on me.
Mm-hmm.
Under his eye.
I'm under your eye.
Yeah.
After the torrent of Twitter requests and questions going, does Terry really hate James?
Does
she find him unbearable in real life?
The hatred runs deep.
I mean, I suppose there are a couple of things, one of which is none of this is manufactured. If anybody thinks this is manufactured, they are welcome to come and hang out in our office where it's basically this for 10 hours a day, 5 days a week. But, you know, maybe this podcast isn't showing the full spectrum of our relationship, James.
Yeah.
Because all it's really getting is insults and shouting and name calling. And there is so much more to you and I, like...
Yeah.
Wait, it's going to come to me. Hang on. I'm going to work on it.
We both enjoyed Endgame.
We did.
We both enjoyed Endgame. So that was nice. That was good.
Yeah.
Good.
We both did that.
Someone I went, I had lunch with some, I will not name them, but I had lunch with some publicists in the TV world today, and they asked me how much of the podcast, specifically the you and I abuse, was scripted. And
scripted.
I was just like, yeah. And I was just like, first of all, if I were a screenwriter, I would be a better screenwriter than that, I like to think. But second of all, no, none of it. The abuse is all organic.
I love the thought that this is scripted.
Yeah.
I mean, isn't it a bit too on the nose to be scripted? If this was a script, you'd send it back with elaborate notes.
Yeah.
Too obvious.
Yeah. Well, I just think it's in this world of fake news, like when people manufacture, you know, these kind of feuds between... But you remember when Vin Diesel and The Rock fell out on Fast and Furious and everyone thought it was a PR stunt? Like,
hang
they
on.
Manufactured it.
Who's who in this scenario?
Well, I mean, you're definitely Vin Diesel.
I knew you were going to say that.
I mean, because he's
not The Rock, though.
I mean, you can get like if those two fell out,
Rock.
Vin Diesel is
Dyer.
In the wrong.
James Dyer is The Rock.
Yeah.
If something went really badly
really
wrong,
really badly wrong.
Like you got like it's like The Rock got rolled out like pastry and pulled and stretched to be long and thin.
See,
yeah,
just like Vin Diesel. That's what he'd say.
Yeah. Mm. I'm more intrigued that you had lunch with some TV publicists.
And you weren't invited.
And Terry and I weren't invited.
Yeah.
Didn't want to see you. Just let that go.
It's you know, they wanted to speak to the mover, the shaker, the power behind the podcast. And, you know, I think we can all agree, that's me.
How did it go?
I mean, I think I offended both of them. They definitely won't deal with this anymore.
Were they convinced that you were the mover and shaker?
No, absolutely not. Which was, you know, we talked about
I,
it. Like, this is
I
not,
really
you know,
want to be a fly on the wall at this. Yeah. And then I realised I should have just been there.
Well,
no.
Here's the thing. So on the other magazine we work on, Empire, James isn't allowed to really talk to PRs.
That's true.
And there's a reason for
it's
that.
True. Anyway, what have you been watching this week, Boyd?
Well, I have been watching the Years and Years finale.
No spoilers, haven't seen it.
No, it goes out. So we're recording this on Friday. Then the podcast goes out on Monday, and the finale is on Tuesday.
Yep.
So I'm not going to spoil it. Suffice to say, I thought it was absolutely brilliant, and just not what I was expecting.
Oh,
yes. Not what I was expecting at all.
I'm saving mine for live TV viewing. I've resisted.
Yeah.
But me and somebody in the Empire office were talking about this yesterday and saying, so much happens in each episode, and even the end of episode 5 ended up so far away from where the end of episode 4 ended that I don't even know where they're going to go in the finale. And I can't remember the last time I truly felt that, like it was a complete blank page. Yeah.
What I felt was, so without spoiling anything, that we all know Russell T. Davies is brilliant at all kinds of things in TV writing. But the thing that I was suddenly kind of reminded about when you watch it is he plants things really early on in the storytelling that then come to fruition.
Oh God, don't say that, because now I'm going to be frantically rewatching them all before Tuesday, looking for a clue.
You know, anyway, and there might even be in terms of relationships. So what I would say is, like, I think this was to the fore already. This has been going on for a lot of years. But just one thing that really knocked me out is how the relationship between Muriel and Reed's character and Tania Miller's character, just so beautiful and moving, because they started out as arch enemies. It's like they hated each other, and now they're like just best mates, and it's so brilliantly done. It's just very, very just subtle little moments between them, and there's glorious elements of that.
There's one moment of touch in episode 5, I think that's been handled brilliantly, and it's never been rushed at any point. No. Their relationship has come along really kind of slowly, and there's still barbs and all of this,
exactly.
But to see that warmth seeping in has been like...
Yeah. So by stealth, he does these things. Hines' relationship was kind of like almost like crept up on you before you really knew it. I don't even know how he does it. But so there's relationship stuff like that gets developed, and the whole big kind of thing that happens addressing the state of the world is incredible as well. So yeah, I love that. And I want to quickly mention you're going to love this, the Bob Dylan Rolling Thunder review, Martin Scorsese thing that is arrived on Netflix this week. Well, all right, but it's definitely made for Netflix.
Is it a one-off TV event?
It's a one-off TV event.
No, it's not. It's a documentary film. Scorsese himself said that.
For Netflix.
Boyd, how dare you discuss a film on the Pilot TV podcast?
Not on TV.
Oh, okay. All I'm saying is it's incredible. Boy. But I'm going to quickly say I watched the whole 2.5 hours of it without realising that a central character in it is fictional, played by an actor who's Bette Midler's husband, and I thought it was the real character that did the real things that he said on the thing.
Okay. Now, Boyd, I do have to be very clear here. Remember, a film is only a TV series when Terry says it is. Other than that, a film is a film and a TV show is a TV show, but that's on only under those circumstances.
Hang on. It's not about me, it's about Martin Scorsese.
Oh, yeah.
Scorsese.
Should we talk about
the way you went? Very authentically Italian-American Scorsese.
Should we talk about Knock Down the House, the the film that we reviewed not so long ago? Should we talk about that?
Film,
no, okay, good. Let's move on. Terry, what films or, you know, whatever have you been watching?
I have been watching, I binge watched.
Terry seems to have wound down.
Sorry, I lost.
Suddenly drifted off.
Weird. Someone replace their batteries quickly.
We should not do this on a Friday afternoon. Remember when we did it on a Monday morning? We were like, boom, boom, boom.
That's why the Game of Thrones ones were so good.
Yeah. Okay, so I watched all of Killing Eve season 2 in the space of a day and a half.
My mum says it's not as good as season 1.
Your mum? Hello, James's mum. I'm sorry for all the bad language and the calling your son a bellend. Season 2 is...
She doesn't disagree.
...is officially... bet she doesn't. Is officially not as good as season 1. What I will say is it has 2 episodes, episode 5 and the final episode, which for me are so brilliant and extraordinary and arguably better than any single episode in season 1. What it lacks is the consistency. I've mentioned it before that it still, for me, lacked a little bit of the texture and detail and colour of the slight absurdity. It's very good at bigger picture stuff, hugely compelling in terms of big set pieces and what have you, but those weird little glimpses of normality and mundanity were really missing for me. But episode 5 in Amsterdam is extraordinary. The finale is bold and brave and pretty bonkers. That's kind of how I felt, but I did do it all very, very, very quickly.
It's on my list. It's as with so many things.
Yeah,
after Sons of Anarchy.
Yeah, you've got Sons of Anarchy.
Look,
rewatch.
Guys, I am now on the last episode of season 6. So there's just one season left to go. So I would say by, maybe not by next week's podcast, definitely by the one after that, I will be done with Sons of Anarchy. My rewatch will be complete. You won't have to hear about it anymore.
The world will be recovered.
But that's not the only thing I watched this week.
What did you
count in late to the party here. Finally finished Chernobyl. Yes. Well, I mean, it's really fucking good, isn't it?
Yeah.
Like, this shouldn't be a huge surprise at this point. I'm surprised this has been as popular as it is, not because it's not brilliant, but because it is so bleak and because of the subject matter. And yet so many people love it. And I find that very encouraging. And I think it's perhaps indicative of the fact that people are now looking to TV for different things than they have in the past. Like this is the kind of thing where people would go and sit in the cinema, but people are sitting in their living room and you think, oh yeah, do you want to watch a grueling sort of like multi-part talk of radiation poisoning, death and the Soviet Union? They'd have gone, no thanks.
Yeah. So have you read all the stuff about the radiation inaccuracy?
Yes, I have. I read the whole article on Forbes, which was very interesting. And they talked about how there were a lot of factual inaccuracies about the death count, who died, who didn't die, the fact that the miners who came in and did that, everything they did was essentially pointless and didn't really do anything. They talked about how people weren't summarily shot in the Soviet Union around that point. So all the threats of bullets in the heads was nonsense. But yes, the main thing is, which is something I'd heard before, radiation isn't contagious.
Yeah, now, so I was going to so I watched it before I read that thing about particularly, I mean, dramatic inaccuracies in shows based on factual things like this don't bother me generally.
No, nor me.
And there was a New Yorker article about that whole, the inaccuracy of it. And that I thought was really misguided articles. I thought it just didn't.
It was a bit nitpicky.
It was very nitpicky. Mm. But then I read the Forbes thing, as you say, about the radiation. That did disturb me.
Yeah.
But then I felt maybe it's just the characters at that time thought the radiation was.
Which is what I thought.
Right.
But then a lot of them are nuclear physicists. So.
Yeah, but still, this was like decades
ago. Again, a nuclear physicist, you'd think, would understand how nuclear radiation works.
Okay, so there's the big explanation of bullets, radiation like bullets.
Yeah, apparently that's not a great explanation.
And the medical staff take the precautions.
Yeah,
not,
and
that's
they
understandable.
Might
but I think I thought that Forbes article didn't even acknowledge that a lot of it is just what they just you'd assume, wouldn't you, that radiation was.
But like, it was Emily Watson's character who drags the woman out of the room, and you're like, she's not near anything radioactive. Because my understanding is that like the clothing they wore and the stuff on their skin would have been radioactive, but they would have been hosed down and stripped.
Yes.
And after they were hosed down and stripped, they're still suffering from radiation sickness, but they don't have anything on them that's then radioactive.
And then he made a big point. Sorry, this could go on for hours. Sorry. You haven't watched the end of
this is the nuclear physics phase.
I'm just checking you haven't watched the end of
I couldn't give a fuck.
Of course you couldn't.
Anyway, quickly, he also goes on in an article about how they're all being red, glowing red.
Yeah.
But then I read someone who was an eyewitness there said they were glowing red, and they were, so, you know.
But also
knows?
That, I could, like, making them look a bit more gory, that's drama. I'm fine with that.
Of course.
But, like, making out, like, you know, because I remember, weirdly, so when I first started Empire, I did an interview with Adrian Lester, and he was telling me that he was in, this is really random, he'd done a film, and it was about, like, radioactive money that was making everyone sick, and he goes, only halfway through production, he said to me, he's like, someone pointed out that's not how radiation works. Like, the money would not be radioactive. What are you
that's
doing?
Amazing, isn't it?
And so that stuck with me. So, Adrian, thanks very much. You ruined Chernobyl for me.
Yeah.
But have you seen two things that are happening? First of all, the Russians are putting out a counter Chernobyl.
Yes,
they're making their own version of Chernobyl because they're saying that it's wildly inaccurate and it's all American propaganda. And actually, the Americans were behind the Chernobyl meltdown.
Yeah,
so,
that is brilliant.
So that's useful and in no way fake news. And also, there was a bit of controversy about whether or not the Brit Chernobyl was ripped off for this. Did you hear this? Like, about whether or not that this... Because this has been... You know the was it BBC? Was it a BBC one?
Oh, there was a I think it was BBC,
So the BBC Chernobyl.
Right.
Like, there was thought that it had... quote unquote, heavily influenced this one.
Oh, okay.
And I think the people involved in that were a little bit put out that maybe they weren't credited enough with how influential it was.
Well, I have seen... I think the director Nick Murphy on Twitter has talked quite a lot about how I think I don't want to misquote him or anything, but he.
Well, yeah, that's what I was trying to talk around it. Right, yeah, go for it.
He's alluded
to
what he thinks the inaccuracies as well in their version. I really want to go back and see this version. Yeah, but bottom line, accurate or inaccurate, it is like the greatest ever disaster movie.
Yeah,
across 5 hours, if you've ever seen. That's how I see it. Because I love disaster movies anyway. By the way,
yeah.
And if you look at that's what it is. It's like, you know. The Towering Inferno, but like really, really
watch it. It's great. Done. Please do not do what seems to be happening at the moment, where Chernobyl sort of Pripyat tourism has seen a massive increase, which I think is demented. But there you go. And contrary to what you've been told, watching Chernobyl cannot give you radiation poisoning.
No.
Right. It is now time for Funny or Dire. where we, and more specifically I, attempt to squeeze droplets of amusement from the desiccated corpse of modern comedy.
Wow.
That was just for you, Terry.
Holy shit.
Thought you liked that. As advertised last week, this week's victim is Modern Family, as chosen by Hell's Bells on Twitter. Specifically, Season 6, Episode, I'm going to say 12, The Big Guns. Now, this caused some controversy on Twitter over the last week, as some Modern Family fans have said this was a bit of a left-field choice, and an earlier season would have been more representative of Modern Family at its best. I can't say either way whether that's true, so we pressed on regardless. This particular installment of the sitcom about dysfunctional families features an unsightly boat blocking a driveway. There's a small child being forced into clown school, a slightly pervy boy ogling his next-door neighbour's sunbathing routine, and a small child being potty-trained. Terry, you must have loved every minute of this. What did you think?
It wasn't funny. So I'd never seen Modern Family before. Wow. I think it was once on in the background while I did something else years ago.
That's a hell of an anecdote you've got there.
Yeah. I remember thinking, oh, Sofia Vergara looks nice. And it's just not funny. Is it meant to be fun? Is it meant to be genuinely funny?
Yeah. I like Modern Family generally, but it is very much one. It's an incredibly. It's kind of like Friends in a way. I mean, it's not as good as Friends, don't get me wrong. But it's the closest you'll get in a way to what Friends did at its best, which was relentless jokes and characters you grow to know and love because if you keep watching them, their kind of characteristics seep in and you kind of know them so well that it kind of takes off and you love it for that reason. But this episode, I have to say, so I like it generally. I don't love Modern Family. I like it. I enjoy it. It rarely makes me laugh either. But as I've said before, a bit like you, I love comedy, unlike you, but it doesn't actually often make me laugh out loud.
Yeah.
That Modern Family never does. But I do enjoy it nonetheless. But this episode is such a random, mediocre. I don't want to have a go at poor Hell's Bells. I mean, but there are episodes which are really clever and unique.
There's one episode...
that's filmed entirely by like a thing on an iPad on a stick.
Yeah.
I'm not explaining it well. You know, right. That's immediately funny. Right?
Terry's laughing. She's never seen it.
Laughing at you, Nana, saying an iPad on a stick.
It is. You have to see it. There's episodes where they go away together and they're kind of some of the best episodes. There's the gay wedding episode. I don't know what was special about this episode. It felt very routine to me. Maybe she was picking like the most Modern Family episode where nothing extraordinary happens, but it's just very Modern Family, in which case, fine.
I think what she enjoyed about this episode was the clown school plotline. I think that was it. So one of the characters, whose name I neither know nor care about, is a clown.
You know you can take notes, James.
Yeah, I could do, but I wasn't interested enough to do that. Okay. Fizbo the Clown. And his adopted daughter, Lily, who I only remember because I saw part of the very first episode of Modern Family, and I remember him, that character in particular, holding up a child, which I assume is her, to the music from The Lion King.
Yeah, that one's...
Yeah, okay. So anyway, she is learning to be a clown and decides to become an evil clown. And I've got to be honest, guys, I laughed.
Oh, my God. Now, this is interesting.
Once.
So we reached...
One laugh. It was a small laugh. It was like, you're not paying attention, you'd have missed it. Like, it was like, nah! It was like a little... And it was when evil clown is hiding in the bath and he goes to the bathroom mirror and she gets him in the face with a boxing glove.
Oh, yeah.
And that surprised me. I think I was enjoying...
So basic slapstick.
I was going to say, basic physical comedy.
But I enjoyed him kind of cautiously tiptoeing around the apartment, unaware when he was going to get ambushed by the ninja clown. And then I think I didn't expect that. But like, that caught me by surprise. And I think it made me laugh because it just came out of nowhere. And that I laughed at that bit.
Okay.
But I should point out, I don't think it's funny. I don't think I could objectively say it's funny, but weirdly, I laughed.
Can we just say this week that James Dyer has reviewed Men in Black International and given it 3 stars when the rest of the world declared it the unfunniest, worst thing ever. And now he's decided that Modern Family, a mediocre episode of Modern Family, is going to be the thing you laugh at after weeks of nothing.
You realise you've buried the lead there. What you're actually trying to say is the editor of the world's biggest movie magazine asked James Dyer to review a comedy, which one might say is a massive dereliction of duty, but I don't know.
Well, I did not see any of this coming this week.
Yes, so Men in Black International, 3 stars, Empire. But more specifically, so we had the clown school thing, which you can't take or leave. The boats thing, Steve Zahn's boat, did that? No one found that funny? No.
Which bit?
That was trying to be. Often they do kind of class conflict stuff, which is they've done better than they did it in this. That wasn't great.
I didn't enjoy that much.
Yeah, I get all the the neighbour tension and the class tension and all those things, and they're all the normal things we can all relate to, but made funny. Not funny though.
The pervy. Yeah. Boy line I didn't like.
Basic.
That was really basic and a bit like you.
Yeah.
Was it Ed from Married with Children trying to potty train a toddler? That was the worst of all of the scenes.
Yeah, Ed from Married with Children is often the best thing about Modern Family. Yeah, but not this week.
Okay, not this week.
Absolutely not.
So we're left then with Fizbo the Clown. And what was it, Lisbo? Fizbo and Lisbo.
I don't know.
The two clowns.
Yeah.
So that's Modern Family. Apparently it's good. I felt, with people on the internet, they take the laugh track out of comedies like Friends and stuff. And they play you like Friends without the laugh track. And it becomes anti-humor because you just get these really awkward silences after every joke.
Yeah.
Like at times.
Modern Family doesn't have a laugh track.
No, it doesn't. But there were times where.
It's supposed to be faux documentary.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, it's incredibly. Unbelievably unrealistic faux documentary.
Yes.
But nevertheless, that is the genre.
But there were periods in this where there are silences after the gags, and I felt awkward in the same way I did when I saw the de-laughed Friends on the internet.
No, I think that awkwardness is deliberate.
Yes,
it's supposed to be like a comedic pause, but yeah.
So that's Modern Family, which weirdly is dubbed funny rather than dire, and yet I still don't think it's funny. So make of that what you will. Men in Black International, 3 stars. next week's Funny or Dire, actually, I've already chosen for us. This comes via Keith Leon on Twitter, and
Keith Lemon?
Not Keith Lemon.
Okay.
It's definitely not Keith Lemon.
That could be the week after's Funny or Dire.
It could be Keith Lemon, but on the internet he's called Keith Leon, and he has suggested The IT Crowd, Series 2, Episode 1, The Work Outing.
I mean, there's so many interesting things about that. I can't even begin.
See, I'm not sure if I'm going to like it.
Have you not seen The IT Crowd?
Never seen it. But I feel like having worked in the computer building industry in the past.
Computer building industry?
Yeah, I used to work in a computer game shop.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Yeah.
Interesting. Yeah, I do love The IT Crowd, and it's written by Graham Lenehan.
Not a controversial figure in any way. I didn't realise that. Well, that was a whole new dimension
to this.
You
really don't realise that?
No, I had
no
idea.
I'm really glad I've told you.
I had no idea who wrote it. Okay, wow.
How interesting is that?
Would you still like to stick to that choice?
Well, I've done it now, so I think we should press on with it, and we can,
we can have a heated
debate. We can deal with the problematic aspects next week. If you'd like to watch that one along with us, then do track it down, and enjoy the autopsy, which will commence next week. News. It's time for news.
Oh, my God, I forgot we do news.
I'm going to need to do this live since I haven't actually prepared any news. I will, however, start by saying this. There is a Dune TV series coming. And I talked about this on the Empire podcast, but I feel entirely justified in talking about it here as well. Dune, The Sisterhood, is going to be a streaming TV series. The first one is going to be directed by Denis Villeneuve, who is obviously doing Dune, the movie. And it's very exciting, but it's about the Bene Gesserit witches. and their search for the Kwisatz Haderach. They, of course,
the
Bene Gesserit Messiah. They, of course, take the water of life, which comes from the drowning of Shai Hulud, the old man of the desert.
You know things are going horribly wrong when Terry starts filming the because you're whinging on.
That's
you're
right.
Banging on about
the
June.
Makers of the Spice
people,
Melange.
What is interesting is seeing this podcast has become so, I don't know, immersed in people's minds, and your connection to Dune has become so redolent of everything you are, that as soon as this was announced, people were getting really excited about the idea of you banging on about Dune for hours on end.
Yeah.
While Terry and I sit here bewildered by what the fuck you're going on.
It's
about.
Like the great circle of life. Like my Dune spaining now transcends both podcasts.
Circle
it's
of life
not limited just to the Empire
King,
one.
Yeah. I mean, it is. I'm interested by the fact that they've already snapped up this thing to turn into a TV series with Denis Villeneuve involved. I mean,
Yeah. Do you think we'll be seeing Reverend Mother Gaius Helen Mohiam in this? Played, of course, by Charlotte Rampling.
Oh, in the terrible film.
No, in the series. So she's right. In Denis Villeneuve's Reverend Mother. Will she appear in this? Obviously, it's a rhetorical question, because you don't know.
No, nor do you, though.
But it gave me the opportunity to say Reverend Mother Gaius Helen
O'Hara.
You
really like saying these names, don't you?
I really
It's your favourite thing.
Yeah. Timothée Chalamet, of course,
playing
Paul Atreides, a.k.a. Muad'Dib, a.k.a. Usul, meaning the strength that is the base of the pillar.
What's the name of the character Sting played in the weird, like, jockstrap thing?
Fade Rautha. The Baron Harkonnen's nephew.
Is whoever's playing him in this version going to be wearing a weird job?
They haven't announced who's playing Fade Rautha, which is the only major role that has yet to be announced.
There you go. I've asked
it's quite
pertinent,
controversial.
Pertinent
yeah.
question.
Yeah. I'm just assuming they haven't done it because it's Sting again. And they don't want to reveal it.
If it was Sting again.
Yeah. And they'll youth him like they do in Marvel movies.
Yeah. Well, yeah, thanks for that news.
You're welcome. You're welcome. I shall update people weekly with Picard and Dune news as it breaks.
More importantly, the BBC have announced the new Sarah Phelps Agatha Christie series because, as we know, she's already done And Then There Were None, Ordeal by Innocence, and the ABC Murders. They're all absolutely brilliant in their own way. She is an absolute phenomenon. She's a brilliantly subversive dramatist, particularly of Agatha Christie stories. And they're now doing The Pale Horse, which came out in 1961, Terry, and she describes it as, I quote, shivery, paranoid story about superstition, love gone wrong, guilt and grief. Can't wait.
Classic.
Is it going to bring all of the alt-right out of the woodwork, like all of the other ones seem to?
Daily Mail calling us, like, perverse.
Of course they are.
Perverse.
Excellent.
Of course they are.
Yeah. I want to talk about Spielberg.
Quibble. What is it?
Quibble.
So, Quibble.
Boy, tell us, what do you know about Quibi?
How do you pronounce
Quibi?
It?
I don't know how to pronounce it.
Do you think this is an elaborate troll of the streaming networks and it's not real?
All right, so let's just break this apart. So for those who haven't read this story, this is Spielberg After Dark. It is a horror TV show that you can only watch once the sun has set, and it is exclusively for this mobile only streaming platform. So one of the greatest film directors of the last 30 years is producing a telly show, a genre telly show, that you have to watch on your phone.
Incredible scenes, yeah.
Like,
but what?
Help me!
And he's
help
writing
me,
it. He's writing it.
He is writing it, and he hasn't.
He hasn't written anything.
He went on a fucking tear about Netflix shouldn't be, you know, and yet now he's gone completely the other way. And he's making stuff for phones.
But like, because I'm going to sound like a nana, right? Which is, I cannot watch shit on my phone. So I can't watch anything other than an Insta story, which I watch a lot of, on my phone. I can't watch telly. I can't watch films. I think it's nonsense. I don't want it in my palm. I don't want it while I'm walking. My phone, not anymore. I've got a little smaller one.
Oh, okay.
But I don't like watching them on laptops. I will if I have to. I like watching them on a proper telly. So this kind of blows my mind.
Mm-hmm.
It's a fucking mobile-only streaming platform. Everything on this platform has to be watched on a phone. This, I think it is an elaborate troll. We talked about this the other day because I was like, can't you just hide it under your quilt and trick it into thinking the sun has set?
At which point I explained night shift to Terry, but it's fine.
James explained that it wasn't just as simple as being a bit dark. But it feels like a gimmick, right? It feels like a gimmick.
Presumably what he would say if he was here right now, which, you know, he is not, is
fuck you Netflix.
Making things specifically for mobile phone viewing is fine. What he has objections to are people watching stuff made for, and he gets annoyed by films being made for Netflix that then are out in cinemas for a day and then get worthy for Oscar and all that, isn't it? But
Well, look, and Spielberg's personal preference aside, I'm annoyed by there being a platform that you can only watch.
It is weird. Yeah.
You can only watch shows on your phone.
At night. Under your duvet.
But that programme is the one that's at night, right?
Queenie.
I don't know. I just think it feels to me like a gimmick to get people like us talking about it,
yeah,
which we are.
It worked.
And, you know, you've just got, I don't know, when you're prioritising quirks in the way you consume it over the content, that's when alarm bells always ring for me.
Mm.
Because great telly Boyd and James will attest to this more than anyone I know, deserves to be seen sharply, brightly, on big screens. You two have screens bigger than my local fucking cinema for this very reason.
Yes.
And we all know that you watch stuff on your phone and the detail doesn't track properly. And it's, you know, it isn't the experience that I think anybody who's really engaged with the future of TV and film wants to be promoting as the future of it. And I also genuinely don't believe that people who really proper love proper telly ever want to be watching it on their phone.
Also, flash forward when this is released and Terry is having to watch it on her phone underneath her duvet with the lights off and she's going, for fuck's sake!
God, I'm livid! Genuinely livid!
While we're on Quibi though, Don Cheadle is doing a sci-fi series for Quibi.
Also, you have to watch on your phone.
I don't know if you have to watch it under a duvet, but this is called
Don't... But you do have to watch it on your phone!
Yes.
All
it's a mobile-only streaming
platform. Don't Look Deeper on your phone, duvet optional, with Don Cheadle. That's the thing that's happening.
But you can probably watch it any time.
You probably can, yeah.
The platform is and just for watching stuff after dark, but no, the platform is for just watching for stuff watching on your stuff effing on your phones, phone,
which you should never do. So no. There you go. Have you heard this? Amazon is developing a series based on Sandra Bullock's college years. She's not in it. So, okay, this is an actual thing. Amazon's developing a comedy drama series. It's set in the world of 1980s music and dance, but it's based on Sandra Bullock's experiences in college.
What
is it called? Sandy Goes to College.
It hasn't got a title. It's only got to, she's exec producing it, but it's based on her college years. Yeah, she's involved. It's not like
somebody's making a thing about Sandra Bullock's college years without involving her.
No, they have involved her. But I mean,
what happened to her at college? Isn't everybody's college years just a bit shit and you spend it having a bit to drink, eating a pizza and like doing a bit of studying?
Some valuable insight into your life right there. But yeah, presumably that's what the series will be, but with Sandra Bullock. Except not Sandra Bullock, but someone presumably cast to look a bit like Sandra Bullock.
But is it her actual colleges or is it like a fictionalized?
I mean, I imagine it will be to her college years what Entourage was to Mark Wahlberg's life, like a little bit inspired by, as opposed
to... You don't think it'll be a real time...
No, yeah, just like
recounting.
It's fresh as week.
College
Sandra goes to orientation. Yeah, that wouldn't be as good. There was a bit of a hoo-ha when the planned Swamp Thing series got cancelled. Did you hear about this? Like, I didn't even know this had happened. I didn't really care, but so many people asked me about this on Twitter, by which I mean at least two. And so it has. It's been cancelled. Apparently, there was a 3-season plan. Everyone was very excited to see the Swamp Thing, and now they won't. So. Came out of left field, out of nowhere, yeah. Cancelled.
No one cares.
Done.
Jude Law is going to star in a new 6-part drama for Sky HBO, who last got together for Chernobyl. And this is called The Third Day. And the most exciting thing about this is, Terry, as you'll agree, is that it's written by Dennis Kelly of Pulling...
Oh, yeah.
More importantly...
And Utopia.
Of Utopia.
Fame.
I mean, yeah. More importantly...
Because Utopia is amazing and better than Pulling.
Have you seen all of Pulling?
No, I had to see the...
Classic,
you made me watch the first one and I didn't enjoy it.
James Dyer, statement of fact based on no facts.
It's based on my wisdom and many years of... I don't know.
Anyway, it sounds really good. And I'm just excited that Dennis Kelly is writing a completely new thing set in a mysterious island off the British coast.
It's called the Isle of Wight, boy. Don't be racist.
Okay. Where there are secretive inhabitants. There you go.
Okay, that's good.
It's going to be good.
Here's a weird one. Carla Gugino is going to be in season 2 of The Haunting of Hill House.
Oh, yeah.
And that's...
See that, yeah.
That's right, because I assume this would be sort of anthology-esque, and it would be a completely whole new haunting with whole new ghosts, but she has said she is very excited about being in season 2.
But it can still be a whole... It's obviously it can be a different story, but just...
Yeah, and she might turn up as a ghost. You know, who knows?
Wait, spoiler. Man?
Haunting of Terry drifted away there. Come on, Terry, come back to us. Don't go into the lights.
I wasn't paying attention.
No, you shot me. Carla Gugino is going to be in season 2 of The Haunting of Hill House.
Oh my God.
Let that sink in.
Oh my God.
Good reaction.
I'm not convinced she's still listening.
Did you see the Russian... I'm trying to find stories that Terry would be interested in, just to bring it back. Did you see the Russian doll news?
Yes.
Yes, see?
Well, oh, I didn't see this. What is it?
Season two.
Is it going to be a different day or the same one?
We don't know.
Natasha Lyon it was very cryptic. What did it say? It was like 2.
Yeah, just 2, basically. Yeah, just confirming that there will be a second. That was it, yeah. But that is, let's not forget, one of the best things we've seen.
Yeah.
Was it this year? Yeah, this year.
Yeah, January.
Yeah.
Have you seen that Sci-Fi Channel are doing a spin-off of Krypton featuring Lobo?
You see,
the character Lobo.
You already lose. If this is your attempt to keep Terry in the room, you're driving her away.
Lobo was meant as a kind of Wolverine spoof character when he first launched. Does that not?
As in Los Lobos, the wolves.
No, just Lobo as in Lobo.
Okay.
Okay, anyway, nobody cares. Right, is that it for news? Are we newsed out?
What?
Terry definitely is.
Anyway, should we move on to reviews? Let's look at the films. Let's look at the TV shows out this week. First up, we have season 4 of Gomorrah. Now, this is the critically acclaimed Italian language drama on Sky Atlantic that charts the fortunes of a grumpy ornithologist who collects and then, crucially, imprisons very tiny birds. There's a gangster with one eye who looks a little bit like a member of Spandau Ballet and a perma-scowling chap who seems to be the lead. But the only thing I could really discern about him is he wears very gaudy jewellery, which he can't stop playing with, and he has a thing for slightly too small black bomber jackets. As you might have guessed, I've never watched this show before, and having now done so, I am 0% clearer as to what the fuck this show is about. Anyone, please. Like, is a previously on Gomorrah, is that too much to ask? Like, there was no attempt to accommodate for people who maybe didn't know what was happening.
But I think what often happens is we watch this on the preview website of Sky, right?
Yes.
So it's going to be on Sky Atlantic. And this often happens with Netflix stuff, that you watch the episode and there is no recap, but there will be when it airs. I think there will be a recap, yeah. I bet.
Who is anyone? Like,
I mean, I'm lost.
Anyone?
I watched the first season of Gomorrah, but I have to admit that I lost track.
What's with the Birdman?
The Birdman just obsessed with birds. That's all.
And what's with the bloke in the bomber jacket? Is he the main character?
Well, he is now.
Yes.
But he wasn't before.
So
but
there's
he left.
A big shock at the end of... Mm. I won't say who, because in case people didn't get to the end of season 3, apart from to say that a very important character died at the end of season 3. If you have not watched season 3, please do watch it before you start watching season 4.
You could have told me that earlier in the week.
And there is, it's essentially the aftermath of that, and they're trying to kind of, there's a new battle for power going on. I mean, it's essentially just a complex crime drama done incredibly well. I joined it in like season 2 and I had to go back to the season 1. And quite frankly, it's not the simplest thing in the world. It is really complex. Mm. It is foreign language.
Yeah, it's not in English.
And it's really hard to keep track of everything that's going on. But it is, I mean, in terms of, I think, being truly kind of a relevant and modern kind of crime gangster saga. Lots of people try this, and I think we've actually got something in the latest issue of Pilot written by broadcaster and journalist Sam Delaney, who makes the case for why it's essentially the best gangster crime saga since The Sopranos. And I think he's got a point in that. It is really compelling. It is really fast-paced. I mean, visually, it takes lots of big risks. There's a scene, without giving too much away, there's a scene where somebody gets shot and the blood completely covers the screen. There's
that
some really innovative and, I think, interesting things
there's
that they do.
There's a flying severed leg at one point.
It is, and it is brutal, and it is harsh, and it is surprising. It is Sky Italia's biggest show. I think it premiered, season 4 premiered to like over a million people in Italy. It's incredibly, from what I've heard, authentic. It's really true to kind of what you see on the streets of Naples. What I would say, and the point you're making is, if you have never seen Gomorrah, there is no jumping into season 4. There is no easy way to join it. Yeah. If you really want to watch it, go back and start season 1.
Yeah, there were more budgies than I'd anticipated, but sure.
Naples, man.
Yeah.
Budgie capital of the world.
Did you think the scene where the guy goes to get the budgie, it was so funny, because there is a dry humour to
yes.
Gomorrah, which is one of the brilliant things about it, where the guy that goes running in, he jumps over the thing, you think he's going to kill someone or rob them, and he's going to get the budgie.
It made no sense. Like, it seemed to be a shop that didn't generally sell budgies, but behind the counter there was a cage with one budgie in it,
because
and he apparently knew it was there.
Everyone knows the importance of the budgie to the main crime guy, and when he delivered the budgie, the crime guy was absolutely
and then,
thrilled.
That's it. And then the budgie smuggler goes,
hey!
He takes the budgie and gives it to the crime boss, who then starts coochie cooing to the budgie.
Yes.
And at that point, I'm like, what the fuck?
But Boyd's right in that it has a very, I think, local flavour and credible tone, right?
Neapolitan native that you are.
What I would say is, most crime gangster things, they try and be American. It tries to be kind of, you know, have things really moved on from Goodfellas? Not especially in most kind of televised or cinematic depictions of the gangster lifestyle. This in Italy, by the way, does double viewing figures wise than what Game of Thrones did. The Italian people love this shit.
I love your talk on the local flavour. Terry the OG Whites as well, you know, when I was running numbers for the Camorra.
There is a new, the new female crime boss is going to get more and more important.
They do female characters. Female characters right. Yeah. Fucking well. Astonishingly. Yeah. Women, female characters in crime sagas like this are wives, hookers, yeah. mistresses, strippers or waitresses, and this has women in really yeah. interesting, influential, powerful positions, and some of them fuck you up, some of like there is no kind of the typical help me out, the
stereotypes, thank you, archetypes.
Both.
No. Yeah.
The stereotypes, the stereotypical women you see in yeah. shows like that don't exist in
no,
Gemara.
Absolutely. But the stereotypes, and nor do the stereotypes of any of the characters. No. So what I love about it is, and I'm really pleased I've gone back to it, and I did get it. You know, I kind of immersed myself in it, even though I've skipped two seasons. What it reminded me how much I loved it to start with, because it mixes the poetic with the realistic and the authenticity with flights of fancy, even within the characters. So the characters are like these fairly... very down to earth, yeah. quite basic, you think, figures, but their dialogue will be weirdly poetic yeah. often, and kind of dealing in metaphors and analogies. And it's like they go there, and so they do with the visual. So there'll be quite lavish tracking shots. A lot. So it's got documentary realism, and yet at the same time there are these beautiful moments where they'll go for something really daring and spectacular. It's just a brilliantly done show, and it is as immersive and gritty and detailed and compelling as the best TV out there.
A lot of the people in it seem to look a lot like Terrence Stamp in Superman 2. Like, there was a lot of head-to-toe weird black attire, and it was very strange. Yeah.
It's Italian Mafia. What do you want?
Yeah.
Well, there you go. That's Gemara. Gemara airs on Sky Atlantic and Now TV on Wednesday, June the 19th at 9 p.m. If you, like Terry, are very au fait with the Neapolitan Mafia and can identify the local flavour, then you might very much enjoy it.
There are so many similarities between Naples and my hometown, you would not believe.
Right. Next up is Catch 22. This is Hulu's adaptation of the terribly famous satirical novel by Joseph Heller. If you were paying attention and or alive back in 1970, or have the ability to watch DVDs, you might remember the movie adaptation by Mike Nichols, which starred Alan Arkin in the lead. This adaptation sees Christopher Abbott in the main role as US Airman John Yossarian, sort of reluctantly flying sorties over German divisions in World War II. Abbott's joined in this by the likes of George Clooney, Carl Chandler, Hugh Laurie, in a six-part series that attempts to capture the novel's sort of circuitous narrative and, dare I say it, slightly wacky tone. But the question is, did it succeed, Terry? Was there enough local flavour here for airmen who might remember World War II?
So I was quite surprised by this, and I don't know what I was expecting, but the absurdity and the surrealism I wasn't, and that's what kind of took me by surprise.
Have you read the book?
Yes, I have read the book at university. It's something you always read at university, and I wasn't a huge fan of the book. Mm. I was going through why am I reading On the Road? Why am I reading Catch 22? Men are such dicks. Phase.
Phase.
Sorry, life. And I replaced it with Sylvia Plath. And Clooney's really interesting in this, who we should say exec produced and part directed.
Yeah.
His performance really threw me at first. So there's a bit where he's kind of barking at them. And it was a little bit, Oh Brother, Where Art Thou?
Yes, and a little bit Intolerable Cruelty. Yes. Like it had a real Coen's-esque.
And I was like, and that's when I was like, hang on, this is tonally not what I expected it to be at all. What I most loved about it, I have to say, is it balances, and it's a really fine line, whatever that fucking saying is, it's one of them, because you have the most gratuitous death, destruction, the consequences of war with this kind of jollity and absurdity. So there's an incredible sequence where their flight is like a dogfight, essentially. And before they take off, it's all swing music and ba-da-ba, and it's all very upbeat and they're laughing and it's kind of, at this point, I was getting a little bit bored after. I was like, they're going to go for a nice fly. And then by the time they're in the air, it is like there's blood on the insides of the, what you call that, plane?
Cockpit.
The tone jumped. You blink and it's somewhere else.
You get whiplash watching this.
And do you know what? I actually loved it. That's what kept me engaged. It kept me entertained, because when it was just this kind of more nostalgia-fused kind of, you know, the good times of war, and when it shifted to that brutal kind of quite, and as I say, gratuitous is the word, because there were bits, a couple of bits where I was like really shocked by it. I loved the kind of slightly bipolar, slightly schizophrenic kind of tone and the shifts that happen so fast, I don't know if it's going to be for everybody.
No.
Because I don't think it's going to be what people expect.
No, I agree with you. It's got a real, it has a MASH-esque quality to the humour in places because it's quite fast talking and a bit wacky, zany, crazy. But no, I really enjoyed it as well. Like the book, I think, is a lot of people find it very hard to get into. It's quite circuitous. It's satire, but it's all over the shop in terms of the humour's, I can't even think of a word to describe it, but it's a very particular type of humour, which I think, it's absurdist, exactly that. It has an absurd, thank you, Boyd. It has an absurdist humour to it, which I think people will either engage with or they won't. And it did, when I was on the internet looking to see how this had been received, there was a reader review on Metacritic by someone called Mr. Monster.
Oh, God.
And they wrote, and this was their quote, "I can see why people like it. Personally, it wasn't my cup of tea, but I can see why people like it. You might." And that was his review. And I totally get that, because people know it's good, but they don't quite know why.
Yeah.
It is. This is one of those shows that is exactly what kind of current TV is all about, because this is a 6-hour art movie, really. Yeah. It's and with George Clooney kind of heavily involved, you know, and a star stud and Hugh Laurie and blah blah blah. But it's quite alienating.
Yes.
And they have, it's one of my favourite books. So I absolutely, of course, I was doing American literature. So this was catnip for me.
When you were failing to learn what iambic pentameter was.
Yeah, when I was not bothered about Shakespeare, I was reading Catch 22 and Joseph, and I thought it was the greatest thing ever. And I still love I love the film. Like, Mike Nichols, the film version was incredible, but it was very truncated. So that in 2 hours.
Yeah, very much so.
But what it did do is capture that absurdist tone where anything can happen, and the randomness, the awful, shocking, sick randomness of war is what it's all about.
And chaos of war.
And the fact that the central character, Yossarian, I have to say, really well played by Christopher Abbey, starts it off as this kind of everyman figure, but then ends up effectively going mad, spoiler alert, being driven mad by the insanity of war and the insanity of particularly his specific people in charge of him who want just sending on these missions, and they're building up more and more missions. And that's the central catch-22 of the whole title and that whole idea, that you have to be mad to agree to those missions. He's trying to prove himself insane, but he's sane because he's trying to prove himself mad.
Insane.
That's what
that
you
makes
do
him sane.
If you're sane.
Exactly.
So that is the catch-22. So it was all about that. So it captures the tone so well, I think. And it's different because the novel jumps about all over the place. This is fairly chronological. And I went to the screening of this where George was there and everything, and they did it in a really weird way. I don't know if I mentioned this at the time.
Yeah, so first and last, wasn't it?
They showed episode one and episode six.
Oh, yeah.
And then a really weird, long, truncated thing, highlights of the rest of the episodes in the middle. So now I've gone back and I watched episode one again and episode two, and I'm like, that was such a weird thing to do. Because why they did it is because episode six is astonishingly powerful. Like, all of the darkness and that violence comes to the fore in an incredibly brilliant way in episode six. All right, fine. But we would have got to that eventually.
Yeah.
And I think this did slightly disservice to the people who watched it. But I think they've done a fantastic job. And thank God that Hulu and Channel 4, it's a co-production, I think Channel 4 actually have money in it as well, have given George Clooney and his mates enough money to make an incredibly lavish, and it gets even more lavish because there's whole sections of it set on this Mediterranean island, and he has to stay with this group of people. And I mean, it's spectacular looking, hugely expensive. I don't think many people are going to watch it at all. I think it's going to be at like 1 million maybe after people have realised that it's how weird and difficult and challenging
it is. Very niche.
It's brilliant. It's absolutely
great. I think they're going to think period Clooney.
Yeah.
Like wartime, kind of Vera Lynn. Yeah. And it's going to wrong foot people.
Yeah, it really is. Wrong.
This is not Band of Brothers in the Air by any stretch. But yes, that is Catch 22. This airs on Channel 4 on Thursday, the 20th of June at 9 p.m. Also out this week is the second series of Dark, which is a German language supernatural drama. We're quite heavy on the subtitles this week, about missing kids, supernatural stuff, and Germans. Helpfully, as you might gather, Netflix didn't make this available for me to watch in time, so I haven't seen it. But I'm sensing, Boyd, that might be for the best, as, like with Gamora, I'm sure I wouldn't have had the first clue what was going on.
I can't believe you're having a go at Netflix again for not making it available.
I asked them to.
I think they think they have. Yeah. Did you watch it, Terry?
Yes.
Oh, good. Okay. I think you've screwed it up.
How is
you've
this my fault?
Fucked up Netflix.
How is it my fault? It's the same thing happened with Jessica Jones.
Anyway, this is a show that started out as one thing. It started out as a fairly, I'm not straightforward, but you know, a kind of thing about children disappearing from this fictional small town in Germany, as you say, and, you know, the family's like, what happened to these kids? Why are these kids disappearing? And then it turned into this thing in the first season that cut between the present day, 1953 and 1986. It became like an almost Twin Peaks-esque, surreal, weird, bold, ambitious thing about time travel, about a kind of evil, weird religious sect with some kind of religious figure at the top of it who may or may not be responsible for abducting these children and why he's abducting these children at a different time and sending them back to a different timeline. And now, in season two, there's a new timeline and there's like a forward-thinking bit, a forward-jumping bit about the impending apocalypse. And so you get the end of the world, you get weird, even more weird religious sects, a new really creepy, bald, freaky kind of character with weird things going on with his skin, who I thought was a brilliant thing. It is mystifying, though. I mean, I did watch season one, and then when I reviewed season two for Pilot TV Magazine, I had to go back and rewatch because it's so confusing and complicated. Even more than Gomorrah, you can't jump into this because it is bewildering, I think. But I do really like the kind of what it is, which is a weird mess of all lots of different things.
Well, I can concur because I hadn't seen season one and I started to watch this and I thought I'd started it halfway through because it made no sense. Mm. So I rewound it.
You thought you'd done another what if.
Yeah, yeah. I was like, this can't be right.
German at all? I'm confused.
What I will say is we'd somehow had our telly set so that it didn't show subtitles, it did dubbed.
Oh, no.
Was it on tick?
So I wrote loads of notes going, why have they made this dubbed? Why is this dubbed? This is ridiculous. Because it was like, you'd literally got like a pained German child and an American over the top going, oh my God, John, what is wrong with your face? And I was like, this is shit. And then my boyfriend may have pointed out to me that it was our telly setting, not what they'd done to the show. I had no idea what was going on. Somebody kept going, 6 days to the apocalypse, 9 days. And I'm like, what's happening? And is that the future? Are they in the future?
Yeah.
And why are they? And also, can I just say there was a death scene with an axe that was the most unrealistic death scene I've ever seen. If you hit somebody with an axe in the shoulder, they do not automatically die instantly. I was like, did you not notice that?
Yeah, that was weird. Yeah.
It went in his shoulder blade. Mm. He hit him in the back with an axe. It went in his shoulder blade. He fell over dead. That's not how it works. I have no idea.
So,
I don't.
Yeah, how you know that, I don't really want to ask, but carry on.
But you just like pained German children, something about the future, something about death and the world ending, somebody getting hung, like somebody else dying, unrelentingly grim and a colour palette that seems to have been taken from a Hovis advert. I don't really know what else to say.
It's a very grey, browny, greeny.
It's a more brown. You probably haven't had enough beige today.
Yeah. There's a nuclear power plant in it as well.
Oh, is
it's
there?
A bit like Chernobyl, yeah.
Oh, good.
Chernobyl.
I keep calling it that for comedy reasons. I'm sticking to it.
Of Chernobyl has changed. We've gone Chernobyl, Chernobyl, Chernobyl.
Chernobyl is excellent.
Are you getting confused by Chernoborg, which is the god, Norse god of death?
I don't know.
It's the one that Peter Stormare plays in American Gods.
Stormare? Is it Stormare?
It is Stormare. It's Stormare, okay. Stormare, I think, isn't it?
I don't know.
What we've established is we don't know how to pronounce anything, so. Yeah. All right. So that is Dark Season 2, which we are in the dark about, but boys seem to enjoy, so you might too. That drops on Netflix on Friday, the 21st of June. Is that right, Boyd?
Correct.
Excellent. Also out this week is Beecham House, which we haven't reviewed, but I've been informed by Boyd that this is the new Downton Abbey. So, Boyd, would you like to tell us a little bit about this while I ask Mrs. Patmore to put on the tea?
Mrs. Patmore's in it, first of all.
Is she?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
This is amazing.
Yeah. It's basically Gurinder Chadha has created it. She's co-written and directed it. So it's a proper attempt, I think, by ITV to create, I mean, they're constantly looking for the new Downton Abbey. I mean, they've got Julian Fellowes has created his own new Downton Abbey, which is going to arrive next year. So they're kind of, you know, because that was such a huge show for them. So this is a very glossy, impressively looking cinematic period drama about a kind of white people in Delhi before British rule, led by Tom Bateman, and he kind of arrives to take over this household with a baby in tow. You're not sure quite how this baby came into being, so to speak. And it's a very, very enjoyable quality piece of mainstream drama, is what I would say. If you like, so it's actually probably less soapy than Downton. I know you love Downton.
I do.
Weirdly.
I love Downton.
I still never quite understand why.
Could I just say, I saw a film earlier this week, and before it was the trailer, which is on the big screen for the Downton Abbey movie, and oh my God, Terry, so I should totally be reviewing that. It's going to be amazing.
Yeah.
Well, but you can review it, but we won't be doing anything else on that
five
film.
Five stars, Downton Abbey the movie. Oh, so good.
Anyway, this has got a good cast. Adol Ray's in it, Mark Warren's in it, Dakota Billy Richards is in it from Skins, and Mrs. Patmore's in it. And it's, you know, I enjoyed it. I think it's good.
Good. Yeah. That's Beecham House. Pick of the week?
Oh, Gamora.
Yeah, Gamora.
Really?
Of course.
Oh, okay. Interesting. You were really swung by the budgies.
You love your budgie smuggler thing. I mean, you can't do it again.
I know. You're all about that gag.
You're not Chris Hewitt. You don't have to do your gags three or four times in one podcast. Yeah, I also did really like Catch 22.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Me too.
But Gamora is like, I think, a bit of a classic, a bit of a modern classic.
Yeah. All right. Fair enough. Shall we have the Banshee segment? Now, Terry, as ever, now is exempt from the Banshee segment.
But I am the ultimate decider.
But the arbiter
judge
of who wins, which is going to be Boyd again. We can me. Right, Boyd, do you want to go first?
Okay. The Slap.
Oh, hang on. Wasn't this on like 5 minutes ago?
No, it was on 2015. It was, which is what, 4 years ago? You never defined
all
how
right,
long
right,
ago
right,
they
right,
are.
Fair enough.
You
fair
pick
enough,
things more recent
fair
than the
enough,
Slap.
No, that is, I suppose, within the realms yes. of our law, of our rules.
Rules. It's in the rules.
Rewolf.
It was an American miniseries adapted from the Australian series, The Slap. It's all about the aftermath of a birthday party of middle-aged kind of people, middle-class people.
It's Jenna Coleman. Is it Jenna Coleman?
No.
I've met that up. Carry on.
Anyway, it's got a great cast, which I'll get to in a minute. It's all about one kid slaps another, and it's all about the ramifications of that and what happens, you know, in kind of all the different rival families. And it's kind of like, you know that play that Jodie Foster was directed the film version of that I should have looked up before I came here? It's a bit like that,
right.
You know, where there's an incident at school between kids, you know, and that blows up into a huge big thing, and it's like, what does this say about, you know, society as a whole? It's a big, ambitious... It was really good, but listen to this cast. First of all, Brian Cox, Melissa George, Tandy Newton, Zachary Quinto, Peter Sarsgaard and Uma Thurman are all in it. And it was really good. And it's a kind of self-contained story, so you can watch it, you can binge on it in one go. Eight episodes, I think it was. And it's on all four.
That does sound good. I knew what this was. I hadn't seen it. I assumed it was an adult slapping a child and the fallout from that. This is interesting,
it's a
child war. I feel it's redundant because you're going to win regardless. So, like, I could roll out anything.
You don't know that.
But, all right, fine. Let's put it on.
I am open.
Solomon.
Yeah.
I feel like Terry Solomon, you know.
Mine does have a remarkable amount of local flavour. So that might...
Go on, then.
All right, here we go.
Hit me up.
So
what does that mean?
I want to talk about... This is a callback, Boyd. It's a callback
to
Gamora.
To Gamora.
Yeah, because OG Terry
this
over there is
like
all about the local flavour.
Neapolitan.
Yes, this is my Neapolitan Banshee. So I want to talk about, or specifically go on about, go on.
Oh,
see what
God.
I did there? That's a good test.
Did I see the really obvious joke you just made? Yes.
Excellent punning. It's good. So this was a kind of a one-season wonder from 2013. This starred Matthew Perry. And it had the jolly premise of kind of a sports radio host who joins a support group after to get over the death of his wife.
Oh, yeah.
You see this voice?
Yeah, there you go.
I don't think, I was about to say, I don't think anyone really watched this, but clearly we all did. So that's quite unusual. But it had a very sort of bittersweet quality to it. And it was shot through with black humour because he's kind of dealing with depression. But also you've got these really wacky, slightly surreal, demented actors of the people in his group, which include Brett Gelman, a.k.a. Claire's awful husband, Martin from Fleabag.
Mm-hmm.
Also Tyler James Williams from Everybody Hates Chris. John Cho is in this as well as his boss at work. But what I really loved about this is it was Matthew Perry kind of firing on all cylinders, like, in a way, you know, if we're honest, he's not really, like, post Friends he never really recaptured that, and I think this is the closest he came, which makes a certain amount of sense because this was written specifically for him by Scott Silveri, who worked with him on Friends. And actually, you know, he does loads of really, really good mugging in this. There's some touching stuff in it too. It had a slight Community vibe actually to it, because it is utterly absurd and slightly surreal in places. It's a bit off the wall, but I'm honestly, sadly, I think no one really watched this apart from apparently the three of us, so it got cancelled after one season because they got terrible ratings. But I'm also pretty sure it isn't available on DVD, certainly not over here, and it is on Amazon Prime, but possibly only in America. I couldn't find
wait
it
a minute.
No, it might be on UK Amazon. I couldn't find it. I know it's definitely on US Amazon, so there you go. So I'm not sure if you can watch it.
So you have
this at all.
No one might will be able to watch.
Well, you know, whatever.
I think you should be discounted because it was all going well until that point. I thought I think you were going to win. But then, and if you can't see it,
maybe in America or with a VPN. Not that I would ever recommend subverting Amazon's geo blocking, but you know, if you want to. Terry's, she's looking. This is not going to go well for me.
So, based on technicalities of where you can see it or where you cannot see it, on pure presentation, belief.
You're such a twat.
Just great delivery, real professionalism and passion and excitement. This week's winner has to be Boyd Hilton.
I am deeply regretting the new format of the Banshee segment. I think having you as the ultimate arbiter of what is and isn't good was a terribly ill-conceived idea.
You're saying you may never win.
I'm saying this may need to be re-examined. Oh, God. Right.
Boyd.
Thanks.
That is it for another episode of the Pilot TV podcast. But before I ask you to head over to iTunes and pimp you out for a 5-star rating, I have some very exciting news. The Pilot TV podcast is going live.
Oh,
yes.
God.
That's right. We'll be putting on our inaugural live pilot pod at the London Podcast Festival on Friday, the 13th of September. An auspicious date that I like to think Terry chose specifically so that she could have it as a perfect backdrop against which to murder me live on stage. This all takes place at the King's Place in London, and tickets should be on sale now over at the London Podcast Festival website. Terry and I will also be appearing on the Live Empire podcast, also at the festival, which takes place on the day after, on Saturday the 14th, assuming I survive. We will be back next week with a new round of shows, many of which might be in English and or vaguely intelligible, which will be a nice change. So that's something to look forward to. And in fact, one of them is potentially very exciting. Yeah, because it comes from Jonathan Tropper, who is the creator of Actual Banshee.
Whoa.
True, this is called Warrior. It's a Cinemax martial arts drama based on a concept dreamed up by Bruce Lee. Terry, you are going to hate every minute of this.
I loved Enter the Dragon.
Did you really?
Yeah. I used to watch it obsessively when I was little.
Do you mean the Bruce Lee film Enter the Dragon, or was it an episode of This Is England where they go to the local Chinese takeaway?
Oh, my God.
Is that problematic?
James Dyer's View of the North.
All right, well, so that's the thing that's going to happen. So do not miss the chance to hear what we, and more importantly she, thinks of that on next week's show. Pilot out.